Hello and welcome to the Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Liu. I am joined by my producer and co-host, Alex Wong, who made it onto the program at the very last second, a buzzer beater. Alex, how you doing?
What's up, man? Better late than never, you know what I'm saying? So we've got two interviews of the century on a very special episode today. You know, we've done a lot of great interviews so far, you know, not to start the show by just complimenting ourselves. I was thinking this interview of the century series, you know, you sat down with Fred for a great interview. We sat down with Norm together and had a really great interview reminiscing about his time in Toronto. There is the infamous interview with Yuta Watanabe where you did not secure the ramen date that everybody was looking for. And then I had a chance to just get Serge to talk about how much he missed Toronto for 13 minutes. So, you know, today we have another one. You had a chance to speak with somebody else on the Raptors.
Yeah, Justin Champagne, who is a rookie, but it seems like he's really coming up here. He's been playing consistently of late. And Nick seems to love him. Pascal seems to love him. There's a lot of great quotes already out on the timeline about their pairing. And obviously, they share an agent. And to be honest, for me, I've really enjoyed watching Justin. So I wanted to get to know who he is, sort of what he's about, his story so far in his short time in the league, and just get a sense of, like, you know, who he is as a person, which I think that that was probably the most enjoyable part of this interview. So, Alex, you have not listened to the advanced version, even though I sent you the interview after we recorded yesterday on Wednesday, but hopefully you enjoy. This is our interview with Justin Champagne. We have Raptors forward Justin Champagne joining us. By the way, just to let people in, this is an off day for the team, but there are no off days for you as you're still in getting extra shots. So we appreciate you taking that time, man. Thank you, Justin.
Yes, sir.
All right. So since you're new to the team and all, like, we really wanted to get to know you and sort of highlight your story. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Like, how did you grow up? What was your background? What was your family like? All that kind of stuff.
Originally, I'm from Brooklyn, New York. I got a twin brother who also plays basketball, but he plays at St. John's University. I got a little brother who's five, and my mom and pops, Christina and Ranford. Growing up, you know, everybody kind of just doubted us, like saying that we can't do it, we can't make it. You know, the way I play, my skill set, my size, it's not going to add up to me being an NBA player. But, you know, I kind of just took all that and just ran with it, basically. Like, okay, like, I'm keeping it in the back of my head as like a chip on my shoulder, some motivation to prove everybody wrong. And it's worked out pretty well for me. You know, I got my offer to Pittsburgh. I committed right away when I got that one. I believed in what was going on over there. I went over there, did my thing, and now I'm here and I'm trying to make it happen.
Yeah, no, and listen, you are making it happen, man, because every interview I see with Nick Nurse, he's always sort of talking about you and sort of keeping you in mind. And, you know, we've seen you play pretty consistently over the last couple games here, and you're doing really well. But so I was actually doing some research on you in preparation for the show. And in one interview, you said that you and your twin brother, Julian, who, as you mentioned, you know, is also playing as well. He's at St. John. I think he had 34 last week. You know, no big deal. You know, just light work for you guys. But
it's a regular day, you know.
Yeah. But, okay, so I was doing this research, though, and apparently you got cut from the sixth grade basketball team. Mm-hmm. So tell us that story. What happened?
Me and my brother both tried out. It was MNCD. That was the name of the school. We tried out for the sixth grade basketball team. I had a brand new coach, and his son was also trying to participate. But me and his son never got along. Like, never got along.
Wow.
And then when we went to, like, the tryouts, me and my brother were, like, really just killing him the whole tryout. Like, the whole tryout, blocking his shots, getting layups on him, hitting threes in his face. And, like, you know, when we play, we talk a lot. We say we're going to let you know that we're killing you type thing. You know, like, a little bit of trash talk is what it is. But I guess the coach didn't like that. Like, he just cut us. So, like, we took it super personal. At the time, I thought it was about, like, not being good. But the kid eventually said, like, yo, like, he's my dad. And then it all made sense, you know?
Oh, you didn't even know?
I didn't know at first.
Okay.
I didn't know.
Would you have not blocked him if you knew that that was...
No, I was still going to block him. Okay. I was still going to block him. Yeah, I need that.
No, that's horrible, man. I mean, you're probably only like 11 years old, and already the politics start to play in, you know?
Yeah, I went outside. After he made a team right there in the gym right after the tryout. He got cut. I went outside. I was crying. And then my brother came outside, and he was crying. I'm like, man, they got us. But it just kind of just like fueled us to just be better and better and better every day we got stuck in that court. So I appreciate him for cutting me, I guess.
I mean, I guess so. I'm pretty certain that you and your brother Julian are more successful basketball players at this current moment, not to throw shade on anyone specifically. All right, so I was also doing some research and I heard that your first sport was actually soccer, not basketball, since your dad played some college soccer.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, actually, because I think OG, his first sport was soccer as well. Pascal, the same deal, Precious. And then y'all all grew up to like 6'6", and they're like, okay, you might want to try basketball. But yeah, what was that like, man? So I'm assuming like your dad was the one that kind of put you on like sports and this path in general?
Basketball was actually my third sport. Soccer was my first because my dad obviously played till like we wanted to follow in his footsteps. Then it was baseball, and then it was basketball. Basketball, we just played because we always were tall.
Wow.
But I love soccer. Soccer was really fun for me.
Okay.
I thought I was pretty good when I was younger. But then I started growing and everybody, like I started going from, I went from forward to center field and then to goalie. You know, so like.
Oh, they kept moving you back?
Exactly. As the taller I got, the more back I went. So I was like, I can't play this no more. You know, I just didn't want to sit in the goal. I wanted to stay and be on the field, keep people in their shins or whatever. Be a legend out there, but just didn't work out that way for me. My dad understood, though. You know, he once we got taller than him, he was like, all right, I kind of understand now.
No, that's fair.
Now you got it.
What was your dad a baller? Like, did he like what position did he play too? Like in soccer? Because I'm a big soccer.
I think he played center mid, I think, or forward. One of the two.
Oh, he's good.
Yeah, you know, he was nice. He just had a couple injuries to his knee. I think he tore the ACL twice.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Like, he was really good. Like, won a national championship at St. John's. Like,
wow.
He was really. Just had injury. That's what it was.
All right. Well, I mean, listen, man. There's good genes in the gene pool right now. So, all right. So you mentioned earlier, man. You committed to Pitt and you spent 2 years there. Second time in your sophomore year, you were named first team all ACC. Tell us about like the process to decide like coming out of college at that specific time, joining the draft. I'm sure it was like such a wild summer for you last year.
It really was. It was like, for me, like at first, I was kind of like, didn't know if I was going to do it or not do it. Like, I was like, I'm going to just see what's going on, talk to a few people, say, get some workouts, and then just see like how it's going to pan out. But I don't know. I went to LA with my agent. We worked out for a couple of weeks, and then I just said to myself, I said, I think I'm ready. I think I have the skill set and the mindset to do it. So I kind of like what Fred did. He just bettered himself.
Mm.
I just told everybody, like, I'm going to double down on me, and I know what I'm capable of doing. I know that if I put my mind to it, I can go do it. And my coaches at school had the full support of them. They, you know, obviously it was a bittersweet moment for them to see me go, but at the same time, they were also happy for me. Like, I still speak to them all the time to this day. And it was rough. It was rough at first, just thinking like, I gotta, I'm saying, pick myself up and move scenery and really try to take myself to the next level. But it was fun. It was a fun process all in it. But I'm happy I did it. You know, I'm here now. I'm making a name for myself and trying to make a way.
Well, I mean, listen, you said it's a fun process, but I got to imagine, like, it must have been a really whirlwind time. You know, like, how many teams did you work out for? How many people kind of told you some lies about, you know, what they're going to do with you? And then eventually sort of finding your way to Toronto.
That was the worst part, is the traveling pre-draft, for sure. I did, I think, 16 or 17 teams.
In how many days?
I picked up a lot at the end. Like, at the end, I was like, I think 2 weeks straight, I was on the road. Team, like, it was bad. Like,
okay, wow.
I would have, like, after I did pre-draft in LA, but once I left LA to go back to Pittsburgh, like, just work out and be with my friends and family, it was like every other day I was leaving, you know. So it was a lot. It was a lot in a short amount of time.
Now, I mean, I don't want to take you to a darker place, but I'm sure on draft night, it was probably a little bit disappointing that you didn't get your name called.
Yeah, it was, for sure.
Like, you know, were you with on draft night? Sort of, what was that process? What were your emotions like? You know, who was your support system?
I was with my whole family, my agent, and the other guys in our agency. So I had Primo, Eves, and Eugene in there. Primo got drafted 12.
Yeah.
So, like, I was so happy for him, you know, like, so I was happy already. But then, like, once I wanted to go to Toronto regardless, I didn't want to go nowhere else. So after Toronto picked, I just locked off the whole draft. Like, I was upset. Like, I shed a few tears. But right after the draft was done, they called me, like, yo, I want to give you a 2A, you know. So a couple other teams called me too, but I knew where I wanted to go, you know. So it worked out for the best, because I got to end up where I wanted to play, but at the same time, it hurt because, like, you know, the dream is to get your name called. And I thought I was going to get my name called because of what I did in college, but it is what it is.
I mean, I mean, it's good that the Raptors picked you up because clearly you're making an impact. But, like, you know, you mentioned it was always Toronto, you know, and this is something you said back in training camp as well. I remember hearing your first interview, a media day and stuff like that. And, like, why Toronto in particular? Is it the connection with the agent, with Todd? Because he's also Pascal's agent. Did he kind of help you guide, you know, towards this franchise and sort of what they're able to do?
When I came on my my workout to Toronto before the draft, he was like, I'm saying, be mindful, like, it's a really good organization. Just go in there, see what you like about it, and then we'll talk after. But like the moment I went in there, I just had these feelings like where I know somewhere is the right place for me. Like same thing with Pittsburgh. Like, I went on my visit and I committed. I wanted to commit on my visit. Like my parents told me like just wait a little bit, but I just knew like, all right, this is where I want to go. I'm gonna end up going here. And I came here and it was just like a family atmosphere. Like everybody was so happy, smiling, showing love. You know, making you feel like you're a part of. I'm the family, even though you haven't even been drafted yet. You know what I'm saying? So it was a really, like, out of all the teams I've been into, like, I would say, like, they were the best. Like, front office, employee, everybody. It was just crazy. Like, everybody felt, like, together as one. So I love that, and that's what really drew me in.
Wow. Well, I mean, you mentioned that family atmosphere. I mean, so you're one of, I believe, four rookies on the team right now, you know, Scotty, Delano, David Johnson as well. Now, I feel like most rookie classes, they kind of just bond together. Like you see Fred and Pascal, they came into the league together. They're still really close to this day. Do you feel that same type of closeness with your current class right now?
For sure. I look at them as brothers, you know what I'm saying? I've only known them for what, a couple of months now. Mm-hmm. But those guys, I love them. They're mad cool, mad fun to be around. And hopefully, you know, we can stick together for a while.
Is there like a leader of the group? You know how like, because we knew right away Fred was going to be the leader of that group because just because of his personality. You guys, out of the four of you guys, is there like a guy that clear cut stands out in terms of like they stir the pot and they're like the guy who leads all the activities or whatever?
Nah, we just move as one. There's no real like someone's above anybody. Like, we just move as one, really.
Okay.
We're all young though still. So, you know, it's kind of just like fun to be around each other.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about your game though. Cause you know, we've talked a lot already about sort of your history, but we got to talk about your game. So from day one in summer league, it was very obvious that you had a knack for the ball. Every time I hear you in an interview, people always ask you, why are you so good at rebounding? And you essentially usually say like, I just go get it. You know, like I have a good sense for the ball. Like I play hard, but no, realistically though, like you're 6'6", but you consistently win rebounds over 7-footers. Like you realize that. That's rare, you know? Yeah. So what do you think is rare about yourself in that regard?
I just think like, I don't know. It is partly skill, but a lot of it is just mindset. Like just wanting to go get the ball. Like, all right, like I know the team needs this offensive rebound. This one would help the team get an extra possession or extra three or whatever it may be. So just go get it. Like, you know, but a lot of it is just like a lot of big guys, like, they don't really look around. Like, they're 7 foot. Obviously, they know they're going to get the rebound over a lot of guys. So, they kind of just go try and get it. But, like, just, like, giving them a little nudge here and there, gets them off their balance, and then you're able to go get it. Like, yesterday, I had one on off a free throw. And all I had to do was, like, literally just nudge him in his back a little bit and then just go up and get it. You know? So, it's kind of – it's partly, like, knowing where to hit guys and where to be on the floor. But a lot of it is just mindset and having a mental toughness to say, I'm going to go get this rebound over anybody.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think like this system kind of works for you, right? Because Nick is allowing a lot of guys to chase the glass, especially because you guys are playing a lot of like two center lineups. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you come in the game, you're playing three. I just imagine like opposing threes trying to box you out. I mean, against the Suns game that we just talked about, you had five offensive rebounds in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like it feels like Nick is giving you guys that license to crash the glass and trusting that you guys are still going to be able to get back in transition.
Every time I get it, he tells me go.
Yeah.
He says, don't even just go in the glass. That's my job. I know my job, so you know I'm going to continue to do it.
Well, I mean, you know, speaking about this in terms of Nick's role and sort of things that he's told you about your role here, what are those conversations like between you and Coach? It seems like you, out of a lot of the players here, really understand, like, what you're supposed to do night to night, and you come and do it consistently.
It's just energy. Energy is the main thing. Just whenever I get to play, whenever I get a chance to go out there, you know what I'm saying, and do what I do, just bring energy. You know, because a lot of nights, sometimes we don't have energy. Like, it's an empty gym. It's no fans. Yeah. No real home court advantage. You know, so we got to find ways to bring energy. And that's my job, is to go out there, get extra possessions, play defense, get steals, hit open threes, you know, get some layups, get some offensive rebounds, get some second chance points. And just really just be an all-around dog. That's really it. You know, just go out there and whatever I got to go do to help the team and help those guys, you know what I'm saying, bring energy, that's what I do.
No, you're doing a great job with it, man. And you know, I was thinking back to, you know, the first game where you scored in the pros. It was in New York, of all places, right? Like, you know, that's home for you.
Yes, sir.
And so I wanted to ask you, man, like, how many people were in attendance for you? Like, how, what were your feelings? Because I think you made your first points came on free throws. So you're like all by yourself. Like, you must be in your head a little bit too.
My mom, my whole family, my mom, dad, brother, grandmother, aunts, uncles, my brother's team. I had some friends in there. Everyone was in there. So when I got to that free throw line, I was like, oh, I gotta make this. I need these points. So I just kept like, all right, gotta knock these down. Knocked him down, and I just remember my mom called me after the game, like almost in tears, like, I'm so happy for you.
Oh man, that's beautiful.
It was definitely a great moment for me.
No, that's really cool, man. And you keep talking about how, like, your mom calls you during games, your brother calls you during games, leaves voicemail. Man, you're 20 years old, man. And obviously, you know your brother's a twin, so he's also 20 as well. Like, what are you guys doing leaving voicemails? I feel like that's like a, you know, what happened to, like, leaving voicemail or voice notes or, like, sending each other WhatsApp or whatever? Like,
a voicemails are very old, you know, but it is what it is. It's, sometimes he gets too excited, you know, leaves a voicemail. My dad leaves a lot of voicemails. Every time my dad calls me, I get a voicemail if I don't answer the first
one. Okay.
My mom, like, she'll text me. My brother texts me too, but it's all mixed in there. Those are my guys. I love them. They always reach out to me and, you know, saying, give me confidence and keep me going. So I'm missing love now.
That's really cool, man. Well, I mean, look, speaking of the emotions and everything like that, I mean, I got to ask you about that tip-in against OKC, because that was such an incredible moment. You guys all celebrated on the floor, and then they reviewed it, and they're like, yeah, you know, it was like 0.1 seconds too late. Like, did that one keep you up a bit at night? You know, almost having your first game winner and, like, you know, one of your first, like, 10 games in the NBA?
Yeah. I wouldn't say it kept me up at night, but it definitely did hurt, though. Definitely did. Because I really wanted to get that win, you know, especially, like, me coming in the game and changing the game a little bit by playing defense and getting some rebounds here and there. I wanted that one. I did want that one. But at the same time, it still gave me a boost of confidence, you know, to, like, let me know, like, all right, you belong. Like, you could do things to impact this game to help this team win. So it was a good boost of confidence, but at the same time, I'm saying it was horrible that we lost, especially by that little amount of time.
Yeah, for sure. No, that one kept me up at night. That's why I asked you about this, because I'm too emotionally invested in this team, unfortunately. All right, so, you know, Coach Nurse also speaks really highly of you. Like, even just after yesterday's game, you know, he was saying, like, you're knocking on the door of that, cracking the rotation and things like that. What kind of routines have you built for yourself to sort of earn Nick's trust in knowing that he can put you in the game and also knowing that you're putting in the work to deserve some of those minutes?
Work-wise, I show up every day early. I try to be the first man in the gym. Get in my 2 and 3, hit the weight room, hit the treatment room. I just consistently making sure that my body's ready to go no matter what, and that my game is staying sharp. Like, just working out to the point where, like, I know, like, within my role, basically. Mm. So, like, I wouldn't come in here and start doing all types of crazy dribble moves. Like, that's not my game. Like, yeah. My role. You know what I'm saying? Like, shoot corner threes, rebound, play defense. Like, I know my role. So just doing that stuff, making everybody see that I know my role and I'm working on it. And then when I get in the game, just try to limit mistakes. You know, just do everything to the best of my ability. You know, like, you know, obviously no one's perfect. Like, I mess up here and there, but just trying to make the good outweigh the bad, and so that he can trust me in certain moments in the game.
Yeah, and you mentioned that corner three. Like, is that the main focus of your development, just, like, in terms of skill-wise, right? Like, clearly you have a lot of other, you know, tools right now, but that three is obviously a huge tool for pretty much any player in the NBA these days. Like, is that the main focus for you? Because, you know, they've also sent you down to Mississauga to the 905. You know, that's part of life as a two-way player a little bit as well. But is that the main thing for you right now, making sure you can knock down that three?
For sure. Just making sure that if it comes to me when I'm open, I can knock it down. You know, just being able to be confident in my shot and confident in what I worked on. So that's been a major part of my development, just being able to knock down some open shots, you know.
Right.
I'm not going to be taking contested ones like that. Like, that's Fred and Pascal and OG. That's their job. And Gary, they got that. You know, I'm there to knock down the open ones when I get them.
Yeah, that's true. But that, again, that speaks to, like, you knowing your role, right? And that's why Nick trusts you, because you're not going to go in there and do some crazy stuff. You know, in terms of, like, your short-term goals or long-term goals, I wanted to ask you about that. Like, you know, what's one short-term goal you have for yourself and, like, the next, like, I don't know, till the end of the season, and maybe one, like, longer-term one?
The character rotation. That's my goal right here. Right in this moment, that's what I'm trying to work for, is to be consistent. I get consistent minutes and consistently play. You know what I'm saying? And just help the team win. Like, I want to win. I don't care if I was scoring 20. I want to win. You know, everyone win. We win. Everyone gets there. You know what I'm saying? So I want to win. And And just for me, my personal goal right now is just to get in the rotation and make consistent impact on the daily basis.
No, I can see why the front office likes you, man. Because Masai, every single time he's in an interview, all he talks about is winning. Like, it's actually almost like it's like a running meme almost. But he's serious about it, you know, and all the players on the team are serious.
We should be. Losing is horrible. Like, it's a terrible feeling. Like, yeah, even yesterday, like, we should have won that game. And when we lost, like, it just hurt even more, like, knowing that we have a really good team and that we can really win a lot of games, you know? So I want to win. I want to do whatever I got to do to win, whether that's go out there, score 0 points, and get, like, 20 rebounds, 10 rebounds for however long I play. You know, like, whatever the team is going to do, I got to do.
Yeah, fair enough, man. I love that mentality. All right, to wrap up, I'm going to give you some rapid fire and hit you up with a couple of offbeat questions. All right, so first one, who's the toughest player you've had to guard so far in the league?
I would say Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Oh, okay.
That was tough. He's you know, shifty with it.
Yeah. No, he really is. And I don't want to talk about the OKC game anymore. We just gotta move on to the next question. Which player are you most looking forward to playing against that you haven't seen yet?
LeBron.
Yeah.
Yeah, LeBron. Watching that growing up, that's all I watched. LeBron. So I want to, you know, get on the court with him, and then tell him, yeah, it's my turn. I'm here. Thanks.
I would love to make sure they gotta get you mic'd up for that game. I need that sound clip immediately.
Yeah, if they let me loose for that game, I will be talking to myself.
All right.
You know,
so. Which veteran has been the most unreasonable with the rookie duty demands?
Nah, it hasn't even been bad this year. They actually said it's been pretty light this year.
No?
You know, like, Fred gave us some pink backpacks to wear. I had to get some playing cards on the plane. I carried Pascal's bags here and there, like. It hasn't been bad at all this year, you know? Nothing too unbearable, nothing too crazy.
Well, you know, I was looking at the footage of the team Halloween party.
They made us sing. That's what I was just about to say. They made us sing.
Yeah. What did they make you sing? Because it looked like, because I was like, this is the level of research I do. I was freezing the video of the open gym video, and I was looking at the karaoke lyrics. Did they make you sing Party in the USA?
We actually chose that song.
Why? Why is that so popular for NBA players to sing Party in the USA? Because they did this last year, too, with Malachi.
Because it's like a song that, like, you know, it's going to make you laugh. Like, it's not going to be too serious. Like, it's just, you know.
Okay.
It's fun. It's going to make everybody laugh. You're going to have fun doing it. So I was just saying, why not? Party in the USA.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. Well, which team, speaking of music, though, which team has the worst taste of music in the locker room in terms of when they get the aux cord in practice or in the locker room or whatever? Which teammate, you're like, oh, man, what is that?
No comment.
No comment?
I don't know.
Oh, come on.
I keep my own headphones and I don't listen to them. Nobody.
Okay. No, that's a smart answer. I almost got you there. When you get your first full-time contract in the NBA, which is definitely coming, man, what will be your first, like, splurge purchase? Like, who are you trying to take care of?
My parents. I mean, my mom and dad, obviously. I want to, you know what I'm saying, help them with their bills and stuff like that. But I got to save until I get to a real, real contract. Like, I'm trying to work towards, like, you know, I know that's years away and stuff like that. But I want to get to, like, where Fred's at and Pascal and them are at, so. Once I get to that kind of contract, then it's different. But for now, just helping my mom and dad out a little bit, but mainly saving my money.
That's nice. That's smart, man. It's really smart. If you weren't a pro basketball player, what would you be doing?
I wasn't a pro basketball player. I love kids, you know, so I'll probably do something revolving around kids, like helping kids. So maybe a teacher. Definitely something within the community. Like trying to get kids out the street. You know, I've seen a lot of stuff going up, so. I take a liking towards helping people, get into better situations.
That's beautiful. If you were a teacher, though, what subject would you teach? And don't say phys ed, man, because, you know.
Definitely not math. And no, definitely not gym either, because I don't got the patience for kids to be running around screaming at me all day. But I don't even know. I don't really know. Maybe English.
Yeah, all right.
Maybe a writing class, because I like to write. It's kind of fun for me.
Oh, okay. That's cool. That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Honestly, English teachers are the best, because, like, you just give them some books to read and you discuss it, you know, like, it's fun. It's the most fun class.
Every English teacher I've had has been great.
Yeah.
And I never had a teacher. Math, different story. They're so mean. I can't deal.
Yeah. No, forget math, man. No, we're good on that. All right. So I want to ask you this. To be honest, it's not even a question. I just realized this as I was preparing. So there's four Jamaicans on the team between. You have Jamaican ancestry, Delano, Scotty, Kem. I don't even really have a question other than that it's really cool that the diaspora is all in one place and it's in Toronto places, you know? Like, this is a real Jamaican city.
Facts. It's definitely dope having those guys in the locker room, because, like, at times we just start speaking it. Like, we just start speaking it, like, slanging it. It's just fun to be around.
Yeah, because I know in the practice facility, they got all the flags for the different players and the nationalities and stuff. They just got to get the Jamaican flag on there just because, man. Because, you know, there's four of you guys.
That's the last one you got to get. Yeah. Facts.
All right. And then lastly, I kind of ask everyone this question when they come on the show. But have you seen that Max Kellerman clip about Andre Iguodala?
The last shot? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The I got to ask you then. So, you know, Fated Universe on the line, the Martians are the death beam pointed at Earth, last shot. Who do you want taking it? And you can have anybody in the history of basketball. Who's your pick?
Honest to God, I would say Fred. I don't think he doesn't miss. Like, he doesn't miss.
Really?
No, I'm dead serious. He like even like watching the game on the bench a lot of the time. Like,
no, come on, he's not listening to this. You don't have to say that.
It's sick. He doesn't miss a lot of times. Like some of the shots he makes, like he really like it's crazy. I would say either him or Ray Allen for sure. Okay.
Wow, that's high praise. We gotta make sure Fred hears this clip. So, Justin, man, thank you for joining us. We appreciate your time. You know, you're doing great this season. Everyone's really enjoying following you on the season, and best of luck moving forward, man. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Appreciate you.
All right, that was our interview with Raptors forward Justin Champagne. As you can tell, Alex, like the vibes with this guy is just incredible. He just is really easy to get along with. His head's in the right place. You know, he knows his role. He's a hard worker. The vets, whether it's Pascal or Fred, have really taken a liking to him. And you know what? He's smart, too, because when I asked him that question about who do you want taking that last shot, he without hesitation, he said Fred, as you heard there. So he's smart. And then he declined to reveal who has the worst music in the locker room, which was a bit of a trap question. You know, sometimes you just wanted to see if a rookie really knows how to play the media game, and he definitely knows how to do that, too. So. Yeah, I'm a big fan, as you can tell. I said wow like six times during the interview, which was something I probably could cut out as just a note for myself. But Alex, what were your thoughts on hearing from Justin and getting to know him a little bit?
Yeah, wonderful interview of the century. Nobody runs traps better than you. Maybe only Nick Nurse. I do love that how anti-math you were. Do you want to reveal whether you were being honest with that? Because Justin was talking about in another life he would like to teach, maybe English. He likes writing. Justin, if you like writing, pick up a copy of Cover Story in stores now. But you did say that, you know, don't get into math. Math is not important. I don't know if, listeners from a certain demographic are going to be happy with that. So do you want to defend yourself?
Yeah, it's tough. I don't know. I just, you know, sometimes you just got to go with the flow. You know, you just don't want to upset the guests or anything like that. But I clearly, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't say math was my favorite subject, but it was definitely the one that was made clear to me that was the most important thing in my life. Like my worth as a person growing up was mostly just like how well did you do in the various math subjects. And, you know, roughly I was like a 90% of a person. So that's something.
I'm anti-math, man. Like, what do we learn in calculus that we're still using now? That's really the question.
You're not using integration daily? You're not trying to figure out the area under the curve? Like, come on, man.
Speaking of math, I loved your twin math when you were like, hey, Justin, so you're 20 years old. So by my math, man, your brother, who is a twin, is also 20. I really appreciate you confirming that twins are the same age.
Yeah, I said X equals 20. X equals Y, therefore Y equals 20. That was a tough one.
Y equals twin, so twin equals 20. By the way, great investigative reporting, freeze framing open gym, and revealing that the rookies were singing Party in the USA. So I have a challenge for you. I know I've been under a lot of duress as the Raptors have climbed over 500 to deliver bars occasionally on this show. I think listeners would like to hear you sing Party in the USA if the Raptors go five games over 500. Do you want to take me up on that offer?
Yeah, actually, we're out of time here. We got to take a break. Advertisements are very important. So we're just going to take a break. I'm your host, Walu. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to The Raptors Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm your producer and co-host, Alex Wong. So for the second segment of the show, we've got yet another interview of the century. Joining me on the other line is Sportsnet NBA insider and host of The Raptors Show with Will Liu, William Liu. Will, I know you're really busy. I really appreciate you making the time for this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Liverpool play at 3 p.m., which is perfect.
Yeah, no soccer for the segment, please. Okay. So first of all, just some small talk that I like to do with all my interview subjects. Congrats on the success of your show. How are you feeling so far?
Wow, okay, this is weird. I'm feeling great, honestly. Like, it's been great to see the reception from the fans. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, the Raptors fan base is incredibly welcoming, especially if you show love. And so I think that's always been the success. The basis of what I do in terms of just, like, relating to fans. And, like, I'm not going to say, like, the analysis is, like, secondary or anything like that, but or the reporting. But really, it's the connection with the fans and no, they continue to embrace me, which is fantastic. And it's gotten me great opportunities to get to talk to people like Justin Champagny, who was great, as we heard in the first half of the show.
That's amazing. And you know, behind every successful radio show is a really good producer. And I think that's really through on a day-to-day basis.
Not so... Derek. Excellent, man.
Yo, don't make me break character, man. So I wanted to dive into this experience you had earlier this week, Will, at the empty Scotiabank Arena. So you've made the trek from Midtown or wherever you live to Scotiabank Arena many
times.
Don't
live in Midtown, man. Come on.
You've watched the Raptors get blown out many times. You've watched NBA Finals games in the arena. You've watched Kyle Lowry crawl between George Hill's legs in the fourth quarter of a TNT game. But this Tuesday against the Phoenix Suns was a very different experience for you. You were going to watch a game in an empty arena for the very first time. How would you describe your emotions as you took the streetcar or subway or whatever public transit you used to get to the arena?
Yeah, so in classic TTC fashion, I took a bus from my house to a subway station. Then I took the subway to Spadina. Then I took the streetcar over to near your condo and exchanged some Christmas gifts, obviously. You know, I was able to finally hand you the Nick Nurse hat that I was going to give you that we're going to be giving away. We're also handing you some other rare gifts. You handed me an extremely rare gift as well, which was a single Vitasoy juice box. It's just so thoughtful, Alex. I appreciate you, man. And then, yeah, I walked over to the arena. And, you know, I wasn't sure what to expect, right? Because I don't even know what the regular protocols are. I don't know where I'm supposed to be sitting. To be honest, I was worried walking over. I was like, did I need to, like, submit, you know, proof of a third shot or a booster? And I did have one. I was just like, did I need to do this beforehand? Because you never really know. The media thing is just, like, it's weird. It's not just as simple as you walk up and you hand your ticket and you go in like a regular fan. So I got there, and, it was super weird. They weren't playing any music until about an hour before tip-off. And so I was sitting in the 100s, and you could essentially sit wherever you want, really. It was just completely silent in there. Players were just warming up. It literally sounded like the reference library in there. And it wasn't that much more atmospheric once they started playing music either. And I think pretty much every hour I would do this little count of, like, how many people do I see? And the first count I did, which was an hour before the game started at 7:30, so 6:30, and 60 people was what I got. And then when the game actually started and I was watching, the action and everything like that, including the players, including the coaches, including the media people who are there, which is essentially the only people, there's maybe like 5 or 6 security people in there now. There was like 110. So that's how quiet it was in there. And they did play crowd music or like a crowd noise, I guess, to like try to like create some sort of like sonic experience. But realistically, there was none of it. It was very, very odd. And the weirdest thing is when the game ended, as soon as the game ended, the players walked off the floor and then it was dead silent again. Normally you would hear like the murmur of the crowd and people walking off and they're playing music and the dance pack or whatever, but it was just immediately quiet. It was really like, you know, game opening, game grand closing, you know? So yeah, it's weird being in there. I feel for the players.
Yeah, so you basically went to the arena to see if you could do basic math and count to 100, and it looks like you accomplished your goal. I wanted to dive into these different aspects of, you know, in-arena entertainment and then the little things that people notice when they're at an arena. So when the starting lineup is introduced, do they still dim the lights and play a video? Is Strizzy still there? Like, how did that process work?
Yeah, no, all that's still there. So Strizzy's still there. Herbie Kuhn is still doing the play-by-play and the calls and doing the drops, and the Yabba Dabba Doos are still, you know, being played regularly. They still dim the lights. I don't specifically remember if they did the fireworks show that they usually do. But I have a whole video of the event, and it was very strange, I have to say. And yeah, I mean, it's a little odd. It is more than a little odd, the way that they're playing right now, but that's why the teams have to generate their own enthusiasm. And that's what I really appreciate about, like, watching the team and sort of who was generating energy. Like, I thought the Suns did a really good job. Their bench was super hype all game. I think they were playing from behind. They were playing on the road, so they really, like, made a point to, like, be loud. On the Raptors side, it was funny because Scottie Barnes was, like, out for the game because he had knee soreness or knee tendonitis or whatever they're calling it. So he's in street clothes, in white jeans, which is, I've been led to believe, is a stereotypical outfit. But in any case, he was on the sidelines, and he is just, like, nonstop standing up, clapping at people. Like, he just refused to sit. And the whole time I'm thinking, like, yo, don't you have a knee thing? But it doesn't really matter for Scott. He was so hype. He kept talking to everyone on the bench. Seemed like he really loved talking to Kem Birch. Him and Kem just kept talking to each other and sitting beside each other. Like, they seemed to have a pretty good connection. But yeah, Scotty was really hyped. But other than that, like, literally the only other person who was there hyped up was the Raptor. And then also me, but, you know, I'm far away enough in the back and professional enough not to let my voice carry that far. But yeah, it's like the Raptor and Scotty Barnes are like the fan base, you know, so to speak.
There was one moment in the fourth quarter, early in the fourth quarter, when Nick Nurse disagreed with a call. And on the television broadcast, you could hear somebody screaming at the refs. And for a second, I really was not sure if that was Nick Nurse or you, but I think it was Nick. What about, like, the national anthem? Like, do you, I guess the 67 of you just stand up for the anthem? Like, did someone sing the anthem?
Nobody sang the anthem. They just played a recording. And yeah, I mean, people still follow procedure, I guess, but that was also quite strange. Yeah, for me, I made sure to get myself up to, so usually when we go to games, you and I, we would go to the 600 level, which is like overlooking the entire thing. You're above everybody, even the people in the Sprite Zone. We're like a whole floor above them, and we usually watch it from there. I was watching from the 100 level this time. Obviously, there's tons of space in the media to be wherever, but I wanted to make sure I got all the way up to the 600 so I could really capture the whole scene as the sort of intros were happening. And yeah, it was odd. It was definitely quite odd. And unfortunately, I couldn't actually hear all the things that the players were saying to each other. That's what I really wanted to go for, was to give you a report of, like, hey, this is the guy who does most of the defensive play calls, you know, from the coaching staff. This is the guy who, you know, calls out the plays on the floor. I mean, probably it was Fred, let's be real. You know, like, we can hear about the trash talk and anything like that. They played enough music where you couldn't hear it. So that's too bad. But other than that, it was still very useful in terms of as, like, an experience, because I took a lot of notes on this game, and obviously, I wrote 10 things about the actual performance itself, but I also literally have 10 things just about the empty gym experience.
Yeah, that's amazing. We're joined here on this segment by William Liu, Sportsnet.
Wow, this NBA guy doing insider, a hard reset? Okay.
/ Raptors super fan. So did you stand up, Will, and give a standing ovation when Herbie Kuhn made the announcement that Fred was named Eastern Conference Player of the Week?
I was standing the whole time. It was an open area, so, like, I was just standing and walking and pacing back and forth and stuff. But yeah, the only person who actually stood up and gave the standing ovation was Jamal McGlure, assistant coach. He was the one giving, like, a solid, let's say, 10 claps. And yeah, but it was very strange. I respect everybody still involved doing the game ops, because it's obviously very difficult, whether that's the Raptor having to, you know, entertain a crowd that isn't there. He's almost doing a mime performance, really. And then Herbie also doing his call, Strizzy doing his thing, Four Corners, the DJ, you know, playing the music. Like, it's odd, but at least, you know, they're still trying to, like, I guess, stay ready for when the pandemic situation, like, improves, hopefully soon.
And is there any halftime entertainment? Like, what happened at halftime?
Nothing. Nothing. Like, it was so weird. Nothing. I think maybe music was playing, but, like, that's it. Like, it was nothing. You know, they didn't have Red Panda come out and kick some cups around and stuff like that. Like, none of that was happening. And yeah, I mean, honestly, the best in arena entertainment was absolutely the mascot. I mean, he came out in the giant inflatable raptor, which I'm just going to call the Godzilla raptor. So in the third quarter, the Godzilla raptor came out, and he was like coming out from the one tunnel, one of the corners of the arena, and he was just like chilling there waiting. And I was like, okay, what is he going to do? Then we saw on the broadcast that the Godzilla raptor actually walks across the floor, but he's so big because he's like five stories tall that it was caught on the broadcast. And the raptor was going to try to distract Devin Booker on the free throws with the inflatable raptor, except for the fact that Nick challenged the call, and it was ruled that Devin Booker kicked out at OG. So it was flipped into an offensive foul rather than a defensive foul. But that would have been really interesting because that Devin Booker experience, like, that could have happened in the third quarter, not just the fourth.
How noticeable is the piped-in noise? I noticed there was defense chants and just cheers on the broadcast. How noticeable is that when you're there, especially in the fourth quarter of a close game?
Not very noticeable. I mean, it's loud enough that it, like, masks, like, the experience, but, like, it's I wouldn't say anybody would be hype on that, to be honest. I would almost rather hear it completely empty and just hear the specific benches give that energy to the team. But yeah, like it was really strange, and there's just not a lot of like energy in the crowd. Like I said, Scotty was mostly the guy providing energy, and like there was one point in the fourth quarter where Scotty was standing up in the corner of the floor at the end of the Raptors bench, and you know he's clapping for the team. Then the Raptor mascot, not in the Godzilla outfit, but just in the regular mascot outfit, was on the opposite corner. And they were kind of pointing at each other and they were kind of clapping like that. But that's really the extent of the energy out there. So it's really important for the team to have these like guys on the bench who are able to bring some sort of energy and importance to the game. Because obviously people are competitive and that game was clearly very competitive between the Raptors and the Suns. But yeah, like in terms of the atmosphere, it's so odd in being in there, man.
So you mentioned you took notes. Are there any other observations that maybe I didn't ask you about that you wanted to tell the listeners?
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, I got to give you the empty gym warm-up report. Like, I feel like this is, like, going to head, you know, down the line when our careers continue to advance. Like, this has to become a sponsorship at some point of just me giving you the warm-up shot report. I might start, like, taking notes on specifically how well people do. But a couple things were interesting to me. Number one, like, so Ken Burch does a very interesting warm-up routine where he doesn't just practice his shots. Like, he's not just, like, you know, shooting some free throws before the game and then, like, you know, doing his little flip shots, which he's really good at, you know, both hands, left and right. You know, he's got good range on that. Up until basically the free throw line area, he has incredible touch on that. He almost prefers to shoot that rather than a regular jumper. But the interesting thing to me was he was just practicing screening. Like, he would I mean, other guys have like practiced like, you know, screening and rolling, especially bigs. Like, you know, for a warm-up routine, they'll have like, let's say two or three, you know, those development coaches who are usually there to help the players warm up and stuff. They run them through drills. Like, yeah, they will like set a screen on a coach and then roll and stuff like that and make a play. He was setting a screen on nothing, like just a ghost, and practicing his movements there, which I thought was really cool. I think Kem really obviously understands his role, and that's part of why he's, you know, in terms of the screeners on the team, he's definitely the one that I would turn to the most in terms of a guy who can make a good contact on the screen and then I'll make a play after that because he literally practices that kind of stuff. I thought Fred was also like, I mean, right now Fred shooting in an empty gym is incredible because I honestly was counting this. He was shooting 50% on threes that were like 30 plus feet. And so, and these were threes where the coach, the assistant coach would actually come out and contest him. Now, not like a hard contest, like they're not going to come out and block his shot. Clearly, like the assistant coach is, you know, only like 6'2", 6'3". He's not like a regular NBA player closing out on Fred. But Fred shooting like essentially foot on the logo, kind of that range. He was shooting 50%. And what was interesting to me was seeing how high the arc goes for the shot. Because sitting at the 100 levels, you actually get to see it sort of like on the floor level. So you get to see sort of how high the ball arcs. The ball will arc like a solid 10 feet above the shot clock. So he has to have such an incredible base of strength to get that shot up because he's not jumping that high and he's not clearly not using his arms to generate the power for the shot, which must suggest to me that like he's really worked on over the years just like building up the strength in his legs and just his core to be able to fire that up, because it is just absurd how much arc on it. Like it honestly looked like, you know, some of those old Derek Fisher jump shots, you know, from those Lakers teams and stuff like that. Like the way he would rainbow those shots, that's what Fred was doing. And then in terms of other stuff, I mean, it was interesting watching the coaching huddles, right? There were plays and the situations where, like, you know, Nate Bjorkgren, the consultant, was fully holding the clipboard and drawing up some plays on the side and stuff like that for the team. So he's clearly very involved. But the Nick has a very interesting thing this year where it seems like he literally tries to talk to like five different coaches during the course of the game. And it's almost hard for me to pinpoint like specifically who is the lead assistant. I still think it's Nate, but, you know, clearly he has a good working relationship with everybody there. What else? Oh, at one point, actually, one of my favorite moments was right before the game, like 15 minutes before the game, 7:15 for the 7:30 start, Herbie Kuhn told the empty arena to vote for Fred VanVleet for All-Star. And like I said, there were probably like 60 people in the arena like before the game and about 100 people during the game. And I would say, you know, at least 40 of those people were on the Suns staff. So, like, who was he telling to vote for All-Star, man? Did he really want Chris Paul to whip out his phone before the warm-ups and be like, hey, Fred, All-Star, he's great. He's about to cook me here tonight. Like, that was interesting to me. But the whole thing was really strange. And, again, the weirdest thing was just as soon as the game ended, it was dead quiet. And it was almost like nothing had ever happened there before that. So it was very eerie being in there. But it was a great game, though. It was a great game. And that was probably what I enjoyed the most, was just seeing how competitive the guys were, and clearly they were able to deliver their own energy just based on the way they played. But the no crowd thing is very unique.
Sportsnet NBA insider William Liu with an exclusive firsthand account of the empty arena experience at Scotiabank. Will, before I let you go, a couple of quick hitter questions. Can you confirm that the media is still receiving their $25 media meal vouchers?
Okay, all right, Alex. I already told you this. Confirmed it privately. Obviously, you don't have as many choices, you know, when the full concession stands are there. Like, I walked past Leela's, which is, like, my go-to this year. A very, very necessary addition to the repertoire at Scotiabank. And it was super sad that we weren't able to get some doubles or, you know, a roti before the game. But, yeah there is still a voucher. Yeah.
Okay, that's good to know. So I'll see you there soon. So
okay.
Lastly for you, have you seen the Max Kellerman clip of Andre Iguodala?
Oh, are you talking about the last shot? Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you, you know, fate of the universe on the line. The Martians have the death beam pointed at the Earth. Last shot for the fate of the universe. Who do you want taking it? It can be from anybody from the history of basketball.
Yeah, honestly, I've asked so many people this question. I don't know specifically what my answer would be. I would say that, like, obviously Michael Jordan, obviously Kobe, obviously LeBron, KD, all these people. Like, you know what? Just take all those out, because those are too obvious. Those are the correct answers. Just going to take those out. For me, underrated, I would say Dirk. It's just so hard to contest that shot. He's able to get it off over most defenders, especially with the way he was able to lean back and sort of arc it, right? So I'd probably go with Dirk. Yeah, Dirk is my guy. I mean, who's your pick, man? What do you got, Bob Cousy from your youth?
Yeah, I would say Bob Cousy. You know, just watching him in person was mesmerizing. You
yeah,
know,
the what Raptors was giving have... the Bob Cousy warm-up report? Was he better than Fred?
we're running out of time. But yeah, you know, there's so many Rodmans on this team. We need a few Nowitzkis. Like, can we get Utah Nowitzki? Can we get Zvi Kerr? Like there's a few shooters. We're a few shooters short right now. Will, I really appreciate you making the time. Where can people follow you on social?
Okay, all right. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at William_Liu. And I also do this show called The Raptor Show, which you're actually currently listening to right now. So that's kind of freaky. But yeah, Alex, I appreciate, you know, bringing me on. Obviously, you know, it's part of the success of the show is you as well for the 3 days a week that you work. And I look forward to seeing you again on Friday. Did you like my gifts?
Yeah, the gifts are great. We can talk about it tomorrow. We'll be taking fan questions, Twitter,
okay,
Instagram, all of that. Will, do you mind doing the outro read for us today?
Come on, man. I thought you were hosting this segment. Okay, all right. That does it for us today. I'm your host, Will Liu, and you have been listening to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe, and please rate and review our show. Thanks once again to my producer and co-host, Alex Wong, to our board producer, Dylan Brown, and we will talk to you tomorrow.